on the forum chain be correct, shall I proceed to do the roll call check?
Yes, please.
Mr. Mumiani?
Chairperson, good morning. Good morning, colleagues. I'm present. Thank you very much.
Good morning.
The chair, Mr. Malamatia?
Morning, Chairperson. Morning, colleagues. I'm present.
Morning.
Chair, Principal Namashe? Chair is on the platform.
That's fine.
Chair, Ms. Mutahun? She's...
Good morning, Chair. Good morning, everyone. I'm present.
Good morning.
Hey, Mr. Singh.
Good morning, Chair. Good morning, colleagues.
Good morning.
Chair, Ms. Mwatse.
Good morning, Chairperson, and good morning, everyone. I'm present.
Good morning.
Chair, Mr. Mulder.
Good morning, Chair. Good morning, all. I'm present.
Good morning.
Dr. Tswaku just joined us, Chair. So you might just have to connect.
Yeah,
connect
okay. That's fine. We know that he is in the meeting.
Yeah. Chair, the other members are not on the platform yet. They may still join us, Chair, and I'll keep you. If there's any apologies, I will forward it to you, Chair. Thanks.
Thank you. Can we have the agenda, please? We have the agenda for today's meeting. Can we check with you, Andre and Mr. Hermans, whether there are any apologies?
The Chair has indicated no formal apologies as yet, Chair. I will assume the other two members will join us shortly, Chair. Thanks.
Thank you. So, the purpose of this meeting today is to receive a briefing from the DTIC and engage on its first and second quarter financial and non-financial performance for the 2022-23 financial year. This is so that the committee can assess, as we always do, the performance of the National Department against its resource allocation income compliance with Section 5 of the Money Bills Amendment Procedure and the Related Matters Act 9 of 2009. I see from the attendance list that the delegation from the DTIC is led by the Minister. Good morning, Minister.
Good morning to you, Chairperson, and good morning to all the Honourable Members.
Chair, if I may, Chair.
Yes.
My apologies, we just need to move adoption of the agendas before we proceed. Chair.
Oh, sorry.
I'm also present.
Thank you. Are you moving adoption of the agenda,
Mr. McPherson? I was just saying I am present. I was just having a challenge joining, but I am here now.
Oh, okay. Thank you. Can we have a move and a second for the adoption of the agenda?
Mr. Mbuyani, Chair.
Honorable Mbuyani.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. I move that we adopt the agenda as reflected. Thank you.
Thank you. Second for the adoption.
Recording in progress.
Can we have a second to that proposal that we adopt the agenda, please, members? Honorable Mutahun.
Thanks, Chair. I second the adoption of the agenda.
Thank you very much. And with that agenda being adopted, over to you, Minister, to take us through this briefing. Thank you.
Well, first, thank you very much, Chairperson, and also good morning to the officials from Parliament and from the Department who are present this morning. Chairperson, the presentation that we will be taking the committee through is unusual in a few respects. The first is that it covers a six-month period that we have separated out the report in such a way that the portfolio committee would be able to see the work that was done in quarter one and quarter two. But we've also tried to combine it to give something of a half-year view of the work of the department. Perhaps more significantly, the report has the compliance requirements. In other words, it sets out what are all the key performance indicators that the department has in place. And honorable members will recall that from the annual performance plan. And then it takes the committee through how the department has done from a compliance point against all of those key performance indicators. But of course, as I had indicated to the committee when we were reviewing and redoing the annual performance plan, we want to move beyond only looking at compliance, important as it is, and begin to identify the impact of the work of the department. And in the new annual performance plan, some of that is set out as the goal that we're seeking to pursue. So this is the first report in the new reporting cycle for the current financial year's APP. And so we've had to reorganize how we collect data and how we do the work. And I must say there's been some real stars in the department that have really pulled together the information in quite a coherent way. And I'd like to extend my appreciation to that team of officials that have done quite a bit of work. So what we've done, Chairperson, is we've circulated to the committee the compliance part of the report, which is the one that goes to the different parts of the state and will then be part of our report. But we were working yesterday and the preceding week on trying to pull together more of a impact outcome part of the work. And we would want to, today is really the first time that it's being done in this way by the department. We hope that the committee will find some of the way in which the information is organized to be helpful. And we certainly want to build on this approach for quarter three and quarter four, where we hope with the additional learnings that the department is going through, that we'd be able to improve further on the work that has been done. I'm going to ask Sulu just to put the document on the screen. And this document incorporates not only the performance that relates to compliance, but also the, let's call it a more impact-related report. And if we go to the first slide, that gives an overview of the way in which the work is organized with a broader introduction and a six-month overview. And then we also wanted to indicate some work that we're doing in areas like international relations, master plans, and trade and competition. We've taken a number of case studies for both quarters. They just over 50 case studies. And then we go to the compliance part. Let's call it the more traditional report that the committee would ordinarily receive, which would be the first quarter APP performance and the second quarter APP performance. And then we wrap up with the financial performance. I'd like to, as I indicate, appreciate the work that Shabir Khan and the team has been doing in pulling together the financial information within a relatively short time. We normally give ourselves a little bit more time, but because the second quarter ended exactly a month ago, the team has had to put more effort in and burn the candle, as they say, at both ends. So just by way of introducing it, honorable members will know that the APP has to address or seeks to address the challenges we know, unemployment, poverty and inequality, through improved economic performance and inclusive growth. That the work of the DTIC for this financial year has been boiled down to three core areas: industrialization, transformation, and building state capability. And we're trying now increasingly to get better coordination within the department and then between the department and its various entities. In the annual performance plan itself, there are 151 key performance indicators, and they set out the work in those areas that the DTIC has a measure of control in what it can do. But those measures are with an outcome in mind. And the APP identifies a number of key outcomes. Investment, that we seek to increase pledges, not only what people commit, but also how we can help to navigate the challenges that investors have so that they can realize those investment plans. And we wanted to set across the department pledges of at least 120 billion rand for the department and its various entities in this period. On local output, we're seeking to achieve at least a 40 billion rand per annum average over the next 5 years. We've set ourselves the goal of 200 billion rand by year five as the additional local output. We wanted to administer incentive support of some 22 billion rand across the various platforms. It's the IDC, the NEF, and the DTIC. We wanted to strengthen our work on exports, and in the context of difficult circumstances, still achieve at least 600 billion rand in manufactured exports to the rest of the world. And we want to place increasingly jobs at the center of DTIC work, the programs that we do, and we're trying to measure more and more the impact of that jobs. The next slide makes the point that this is the first report under the new format for this financial year, and it constitutes a shift. We used to measure activities. Now we're seeking to say we still have to do those activities because the activities give you the impact and outcome. But let's begin to measure where we are with the impact and outcome in various sectors and look at things like jobs, like manufacturing, local content, investment, industrial funding, and budget vote commitments. We've selected a large number of case studies, and yet they represent a small percentage of the overall case studies within the DTIC group. And they've been chosen to illustrate the work done by the DTIC over the reporting period. In the next slide, we look at the global growth context. Honorable members will see here the projections by the International Monetary Fund, and it has a global growth that was projected at 6% for 2021. And then, that's the revised figure after changes were made to the original projection of the IMF. For 2022, the projection, which is not obviously yet final, brings global growth down very substantially to 3.2%. And for 2023, the current projection of the IMF indicates an expectation that growth will drop further. And then they've indicated growth in various regions, like the Euro area, the Middle East and Central Asia, emerging and developing Asia, Sub-Saharan Africa, Latin America and the Caribbean, and then, of course, given its size, the United States. And if we go to the next slide, connecting is the global growth outlook, which is fairly negative. It's about slowing growth. A number of big economies have spoken about the prospect, maybe the likelihood of the world going into recession or the large economies going into recession next year. And so the global growth outlook, therefore, has quite a significant impact on investment, because investors anticipate what will happen in the demand side of the economy, which of course is affected by global growth, and then they adjust their investment decisions in light of that. And we've provided the committee with foreign direct investment trends in 2022 for quarter one and for quarter two, and the average. And honorable members will see a decline in the average growth rate compared to 2021. This is now an investment that's flowing into the real economy. And the decrease is particularly pronounced in developed economies. And given our exposure to developed economies with the export basket that we have, it's an area that we've got to keep a real eye on. There are a number of factors that have impacted the global growth outlook. We pull out three: substantially higher inflation in many countries with aggressive interest rate increases, particularly in the US, the EU, and the UK. The significant slowdown in China. China's retained a program of very very substantial COVID-19 lockdowns, and that has contributed to a very, very significant reduction in their growth. And then the war in Ukraine has resulted in big price shocks in both global food and energy markets. The next slide. It points to some of the domestic challenges. The South African economy, of course, is affected by these global developments, including through inflationary pressures, export market weaknesses, and exchange rate volatility. Each of these are ones that the authorities, the Reserve Bank in particular, keep a fairly careful eye on. In addition to these global impacts that has affected the economy, they are also in quarter one and quarter two, the economy has been negatively impacted by a number of domestic factors. First, the floods in April, which was at the start of the reporting period, affected large parts of KZN, which is a key manufacturing backbone, but also quite an important logistics hub for South Africa. Most of our goods are along the highway from Johannesburg to Etiquini. We've had an extended period of load shedding, which has significantly impacted on manufacturing production and on business confidence. And finally, the emerging inflationary pressures, which were imported inflation, meaning our high oil prices, food prices, have changed the speed with which we've seen shifts in the internal composition of the consumer price index. So to put it very Clearly, the, I think all members would have experienced is prices have risen quite substantially, and the Reserve Bank has responded to it. The next slide is a photograph that was taken from the air of the Toyota plant in KZN at one point during the floods, and honorable members will see the rising waters. And I visited the plant, and it was quite an incredible story of damage, with the average water across the entire complex. And it's a huge plant with many different buildings and sections and so on. But it was at least knee-deep, at parts waist-deep. And because of the structure of the plant, in many cases, there are these pits that work is done so that workers would work from below to the vehicle that is hoisted just above them. And in one particular pit, the water was 5 meters deep. So the damage there, when we spoke to Toyota, they said if you take the entire ecosystem of Toyota into account, not just the plant, but the suppliers, the customers, then they believe that the damage could be quite close to 20 billion rand. This is one value chain, and that's not all of the damage that was done by the floods in KZN. And it's highlighted the challenge of climate change. The next slide provides a little bit more picture evidence of parts of KZN damaged by the floods. The next slide provides a little bit of information that one of the media outlets has collated, and which sets out, it's an interesting take on load shedding. And what it does, it takes a number of years from 2015 to 2022, and it looks at the hours of national load shedding. Now, I haven't independently fact-checked this through the department or through government, but I thought it is useful in just showing the work that has been done by a group of private researchers that that indicates how the economy has been affected. And if honorable members look at the graph, what it indicates, if we look at the very bottom one, I think what that would indicate, and that's probably 2018, is that the cumulative hours is relatively modest compared to other years that are measured. But if you look at the red line, that is 2022, and the impact of load shedding, of course, on the manufacturing sector is very substantial. So whether anyone disputes small points on this graph, nonetheless, I think the general trend line is very clear that energy is becoming a big part of the storyline for 2022. The next slide begins to look at the domestic investment developments, the increase in total investment, which has been modest. The graph shows it a bit more clearly. While we're still in the positive territory, it's nowhere close to what is required to be able to lift our structural rate of growth in the long run. But we have seen increasing work on domestic investment. The next slide. Now, in this section, honorable members, we will go through some of the key, let's call it, impact and outcome of the individual work that is set out in the APP. So there would be meetings or reports or action minutes or so on, and they all are intended to have an outcome. So this now begins to provide a little insight into the outcome. The first area we looked at is investment. Investment is vital because when people build factories or they sink new mining shafts or they expand renewable energy wind farms or solar plants, the size of the economy rises, the number of jobs increase, the tax stack of government improves, which provides resources for education, healthcare, and community development. So investment is a key matter to look at. And what we're doing now is in a broadly declining environment around investment globally. Honorable members will recall the previous slide where it showed still a very challenging investment climate, for particularly cross-border investment flows across the world. Our work is cut out for us, that we should not really just point to that. We've got to do more to be able to lift the level of investment in South Africa. So in the two quarters, the work done across the department has been aggregated, and when we add all of the work together, about 66 billion rands worth of investments have been attracted or facilitated. Our annual goal was to reach 120 billion rand, mainly private sector investment during the 12-month period. And so we work with private firms to enable pledge investment to be realized. And the period that we've covered with the 66 billion is the 6 months since 1 April, with whatever information is available, because obviously we fairly close to the end of quarter two. There may be some additional information that becomes available that can add or color the picture in somewhat. So that's the overall story on investment. The next slide breaks up a little bit the target that the department has set for itself and the DTIC group over this period. And honorable members will see in quarter one, the target was 10 billion as the department gets its operations going in the new financial year, and the achievement was 15.3 billion. In quarter two, the target was 20 billion, and just over 50 billion was secured. Now, a lot of this is assisted by invested challenges that are unblocked or addressed by Invest South Africa. And some of that will come out a little bit later in the report. Next slide. This just highlights 8 investments that were publicly launched in Q1 and Q2. And these 8 amount to about just over 14 billion rand. The biggest of them was the SapiCycle plant expansion in Umkomaas in KwaZulu-Natal that was launched in September. It accounts for 7.7 billion rand, and we've got a case study on it, which we'll come to later in the presentation. The second one was a furnace that Consol, the glass manufacturer, installed at its plant in Nigel, and that accounts for 1.5 billion rand. There was a launch by Metair of an automotive manufacturing plant in Kwadukuza in KZN, which accounted for 1.4 billion rand. And then Google's Equiano subsea cable was launched in Cape Town, and the portion in this period that Google ascribes to as investment spending was 1.4 billion rand. The Isuzu D-Max Bucky was launched in Gqeberha in April, and that had an investment price tag of 1.2 billion rand. Kerry Foods launched a food facility in Hammersdale in May, and that was 650 million rand. Sandvik launched a capital equipment plant in Ekurhuleni in September that accounted for 350 million rand. And Sigma launched its call center facility in Mitchells Plain in July with a investment spend of 267 million rand. Most of these, if not all of these, will be case studies that will come up later, which will give members a better sense of what they involve. The next slide. This now shifts away from investment. This looks at the incentives that's available within the DTIC group and what have we been able to get as either approvals of project proposals by private sector firms or even better, monies that are dispersed where it leaves the bank accounts of the public entities and it goes to the private firms and it can be used by them. And so in this slide, we've leveraged the DTIC group funding instruments, that's the work on industrial financing and the competitiveness enhancement programs, and it covers the IDC and the NEF. We've also taken into account in the slide where we've been able to get money allocated from programs of the DTIC, like the Equity Equivalent Investment Program and the Automotive Industry Transformation Fund and the Competition Managed Funds. But we have excluded from here anything that is related to trade rebates or trade measures because they have a different instrument that works differently. And for the six-month period, the data is set out that in incentives that were enabled by the DTIC over this six-month period amounted to 14 billion rand, and 12.6 billion rand was actually dispersed. The next slide narrows the focus, and it excludes external parties like the JP Morgan Fund and the auto fund, and it only looks at the money that is directly within the control of the DTIC group. That's the department, the IDC, and the NEF. And the value of the approvals of more than 300 projects in these two quarters amounted to 12.5 billion rand. And the value of the incentives disbursed in these two quarters amounted to 12 billion against the annual target of 22 billion rand. We indicate that the projects are located in 23 of the country's municipal districts, and 11 of these are from largely rural districts. The impact of this on local output is driven by the steel industry, motor vehicle parts, renewable energy components, and poultry are some examples of it. The next slide moves from incentives to mergers. Mergers are quite an important way in which firms consolidate their operations, increase their size, and it can, in particular instances, have a very positive effect in growing businesses. You can either grow organically, you grow because you're expanding your own market share, or you can grow because you buy out another company. When you buy out a competitor or a company connected to your ecosystem, there are typically quite important competition considerations that come in. But in the South African law, there's also a public interest consideration that the Act sets out. And the department has a responsibility to look at that. There were 23 mergers that the ministry participated based on public interest considerations. Some of these are still going through the merger processes. And there were 12 large and let's call them medium-sized mergers that were approved by the competition authorities in which the ministry participated during these two quarters. And there's a little breakdown in the box at the bottom of the slide. It indicates for quarter one how many merger notifications were received, how many did the department and the ministry participate in based on public interest considerations. And those considerations are things like jobs, like transformation and worker ownership, like the impact it has on associated industries. The same information is provided for quarter two. And the next slide takes the storyline a little bit further for the competition authorities by pointing to the other work that they do. There's a major market inquiry that the Competition Commission has done on what we can call the new economy. These are online platforms like the ones that you can buy computers and groceries, or the ones that you can book accommodation and go and stay at a B&B, or the ones that you can buy cars. There are many different online platforms. They've simplified life for South Africans. They've made it possible for us to do so much more, so much quicker. But they have quite significant competition implications. And the Competition Commission has done an investigation. It's given all the players an opportunity to make submissions. And it's published its preliminary results in its provisional report. It's now engaging with the players, and as soon as that is completed, it will then publish its report. This is quite a significant report, not only because this is quite an important sector, it's the growing sector in all modern economies, but in addition to that, it's the first time that the Competition Commission is doing a market inquiry under the new provisions of the Competition Amendment Act. And honorable members may recall that Parliament amended the Competition Act very, very substantially in 2018 and 2019. And the new provisions are being tested for the first time in this important market inquiry. The next slide provides information on a second market inquiry in quarter two that the Competition Commission will be commencing. These inquiries typically take 18 months to complete. And so the Commission has published the draft terms of reference in August, and they want to look at various challenges faced by fresh produce farmers, and particularly small-scale farmers. And those would be things like access to finance and technical support, lack of market access. Sometimes small players will complain that they can't get access to large supermarkets, or they can't get access to fertilizers or seeds or day-old chicks. And all of these are part of the agro-processing sector. This market inquiry won't look at all of agro-processing. It will look specifically at the fresh produce sector and see, are there any practices or structural features that limit small businesses and new entrants from coming into those markets? The next slide is quite an important piece of work done by the Competition Commission, where they monitor food prices, because food inflation is a big concern. And the latest report was published in August. It highlights some of the drivers of food inflation. And in this particular report, it expands on the previous analysis on concentration in the sunflower oil value chain, and it extends it to the price of cooking oil at wholesale and retail levels. And it included the risk of any particular firm opportunistically increasing its prices, because everybody knows that prices are rising globally. What the Commission did find is that there's not been a significant increase in the price of fruit and veg in the recent months, in the last few months. That it's been mainly tomatoes where there's been price volatility. So these things vary every time the report comes out. It gives a new insight into what's happened to prices. The next slide. This points to what is commonly called dawn raids by the Competition Commission, where the eight major long-term insurance companies were raided. And this was conducted by the Commission on the 25th of August in Gauteng, KZN, in the Western Cape. And the Commission was following up on its suspicion that there could be collusive practices, collusion, to fix prices or trading condition for fees for investment products such as retirement annuities, life insurance, cover for chronic medical conditions and disability, life cover and funeral assistance benefits. So this investigation is ongoing, and the only thing that the Commission can indicate at the moment, of course, is that it's conducted these search and seizure operations, as it's called. The next slide. Just point to some institutional issues that Ms. Doris Tsepe was appointed Commissioner of the Competition Commission with effect from 1 September 2022. This follows a handing over period with her predecessor. We indicate her professional qualifications and her participation previously on an expert panel on amendments to the Competition Act. And with her appointment, we now have two women leading the two competition authorities that are responsible to the DTIC, because Ms. Mondo Mazwai serves as chairperson of the Competition Tribunal. And in both of these institutions, the institutions have a reputation globally of really being innovative and very, very effective. The next slide shifts us from competition issues to production outcomes, and we've just taken the production in the automotive sector and the information that has been collated by the department that the total value of motor vehicles and components manufactured in these two quarters amounted to 114 billion rand, and that the total value of exports and domestic sales are broken down for the quarters. In future reports, we would be looking also at tracking things like the number of vehicles produced, and we do already track jobs, as honorable members will see a bit later. The next slide makes the point that in this period, we've also adjusted the incentive program and the master plan elements. We signed into law the amended APDP regulations in August, and the duty credit certificates are really a very important part of supporting the sector. It enables manufacturers to grow production volumes, to increase local components in each vehicle that's driven, and contribute to jobs in the sector. The next slide. This now looks at exports more generally beyond the auto industry. We have set ourselves the target of 600 billion rand in manufactured exports for the year. In the 5 months, the data for September is not yet available. In the 5 months up to August, manufactured exports of 329 billion rand was achieved and reflected on the SARS database. The next slide shows this by quarter, what the data showed in quarter one and in quarter two. And then it also provides information on the progress against the annual target. So the exports are now 55% of the annual target over a five-month period. So barring a major challenge in the remaining period of this financial year, we are hopeful that we can achieve the annual target. The next slide breaks the export data into a very interesting reflection. We asked ourselves the question, where are we doing better? What are the products that we're able to achieve more? And in a bit of a research project that was done, we looked at the export compared to the last 10 years. And the sectors that posted their best export results in a decade, there were 31 large export commodities that had their best ever performance over a 10-year period. And those include, for example, the export of fresh apples that crossed the 3 billion rand threshold for the first time, making South Africa the fifth largest exporter globally last year. The exports of sunflower oil that surpassed the 1 billion rand in exports for the first time, with major markets like the United Arab Emirates, Spain, Malaysia, Australia, and the UK. And they became significant buyers for the first time. And then following years of instability, we saw exports of flat roll steel broke export records for the fourth time in the last five quarters. We saw export of soups and broths that reached an all-time high, driven by an expansion into markets into the rest of Africa, including Mozambique, Botswana, Namibia, and Nigeria. There were 13 export markets that had their best export quarter in a decade, including to major markets like India, Japan, Morocco, Italy, and the Netherlands. So here we've just taken the data for quarter one because global data is not available yet for quarter two at this level of aggregation. The next slide provides information on, we took a number of DTIC programs, the industrial financing one, the export one, the ITAC work, and the work of the ECIC. So this doesn't cover all of the DTIC's work. It just took those four. And those four supported 22 billion rands worth of exports. 18.7 billion was done through provision of import duty rebates and drawbacks of customs duties for local manufacturers. 1.1 billion rand was supported through provision of industrial financing for projects. 33 million was through exhibitions and missions. 566 million rand was through the insurance risk cover that's provided for export transactions. And 1.9 billion rand was generated not from things that we sell that you can touch and feel and hold in your hand, but from the global business services projects. Those would be things like your call centers that provides digital services or that provides voice services globally. And all of these are gross figures. We've done the same for quarter two. The quarter two figures is on the next slide. It's 20.7 billion rand for these four DTIC programs for the quarter. And it's also broken down into similar headings. The next slide just breaks down our marketing. Now, up to now, we've measured the successes of our exhibitions and missions by saying how many missions we had and how many people participated. And then the next part became how many women are we bringing in, how many young people are we bringing in. But we're shifting that now. I've asked the team that we do need to measure the value of export orders that are achieved. Now, it's a challenging one because a person may go to an exhibition in quarter one, but begin to land business a year later or 2 years later because you often have to work very closely with an export agent or an import agent on the other side of your transaction. But nonetheless, the team is now beginning to track this, and they've shown that just by beginning to bring this in, we can see what we're doing. If members look, honourable members look at the last few slides, you'll see 5 missions and exhibitions delivered 33.8 million in export orders. We're also tracking, are we also getting Black South Africans into exports? It's an important part of shifting the focus and the narrative around transformation, that we want transformation to be a tool also of growth, of expanding the economy, of creating jobs, and of boosting exports to the rest of the world. So we'll be monitoring this to make sure that we are able to make this big shift, that Black South Africans are not don't only see opportunities in their domestic market and through state procurement, but that we begin to sell goods to businesses in many different parts of the world. The next slide. This is an interesting slide because we ask the question, how can we be sure that we are not only supporting Joburg, Cape Town, Swani, and Etiquette? They're important. They're your big engines of the economy, and we should protect and support them. But there are millions of South Africans outside of those main metro areas. And so the team has begun to collect information that shows, if you look just at missions and exhibitions, where do we draw our people from? And 17 companies came from non-metro districts in quarter one, and eight from seven non-metro districts in quarter two. Then we also looked at the other metros, the metros that are not your very large metros. So excluding these four that I've mentioned, Joburg, Cape Town, Tshwane, and Etiquette. And we see there 12 companies participated in quarter one and 11 companies in quarter two. And the little table there provides information. So members would see that the non-metro districts, we had Bojanala, for example, or Kapadu district municipality in quarter one. We had Capricorn and West Rand in quarter two. So it's really just to get the department's personnel to see the importance of moving out of the areas that we used to and that we've done much of our work in the past, which is the main metros. The next slide provides information on the work of the ECIC. They provide a risk cover to businesses who export to the rest of the world. And one of the things that they do is they put conditions into the risk cover that requires local products to be used by those companies. So that we're going to make available really public resources that we can see a benefit to South Africans. And they've reported that companies that they've supported in quarter one and quarter two generated South African goods and services worth 1.1 billion rand. So the companies would be doing their products, their service, their orders would be to another country, but a lot of that work would be done here in South Africa. For example, building materials, construction equipment, mining equipment, water tanks, water pipes, electrical equipment, plumbing materials, and so on. The next slide looks at the level of insurance cover in quarter one, and it amounted to 137 million. The next slide provides information on local output. This is work in progress, and it's one of the most interesting parts of the work that the department will be doing for quarter three and quarter four, which is to measure the impact of additional local industrial output. So we've just taken four projects here to begin to illustrate the kind of impact that we can have. And there are, of course, more than 100 projects that will be evaluated and we look at the value addition. And so the DTIC will develop a more detailed metric on localization, but for these four projects, 4.4 billion rand in additional local output was recorded. Now, some of this is where construction is taking place now, and we'll see the impact down the line. So the pledges have been made, or the financing have been provided, or the agreements have been reached, and we'll then see the increased local output as these projects mature. These four projects that we looked at includes ShopRite Checkers, which is still subject to regulatory approval, Consol and Estron, as well as the new production at Highveld Steel. And in the report itself that we're tabling today, there are many other examples of increased local output that we're going to aggregate. We just didn't have enough time to aggregate a bigger sample. I had hoped we could get 10 projects that we would calculate it, but that would be the work that we can do in quarter 3 and 4. The next slide just points a little bit of information to the Estron energy project, where they're basically increasing the output of the refinery by 15,000 barrels of production a day. They expect that the refinery may start up as early as December. And depending on the price of oil, this could add 1.4 billion rand into the localization effort in South Africa. And then also has the effect of reducing the country's fuel imports and positively impacting on our balance of payments. So there's examples of the construction happening, and this came as a result of a condition put into the merger a number of years back, where this was the old Caltex. The next slide looks at Consol Glass. We'll come more to Consol Glass a little bit later. There's our case study on it. There's also Massmart ShopRite merger and the ArcelorMittal rail and structural steel plant. In fact, I went to the structural steel plant, and in quarter three, we'll be able to report even higher figures, given the fact that in quarter three, a whole new plant has been opened in Highveld Steel. The next slide provides the first work on the jobs impact. And it's like localization, it will become an improved version of this will be done in future reports. But we looked at the impact of master plans. How many workers do these various master plans cover? In the case of poultry and sugar, it's 136,000. For the GBS, that's the Global Business Services master plans, the sector has got about 82,000 workers. The auto master plan, just over 100,000. The clothing and furniture master plans, 121,000, and steel, 176,000. Now, of course, these are the formal sector numbers. There are additional workers in the informal sector which are not counted, and that amounts to just over 600,000 workers that are covered by the work of the DTIC on the master plans. The next slide provides little snapshot selected indicators of jobs in different sectors like foam, jobs that are actively in the two quarters where payments were made through the GBS, competition settlements that are still valid, 43,000 workers are covered by that. Some factory interventions, will come later to those, but the two big ones are Ashton, Langeberg, and the Sandvik one. And then workers covered by trade interventions and past anti-dumping and safeguard duties. Some initial work has been done on that. We'll be expanding that and looking at the cumulative effect of all the measures that are still in place. But that alone in quarter one covered 25,000 workers on the trade side. The next slide looks at worker ownership. There were 7 transactions in this 6-month period covering 106,000 workers. Consol reached an agreement with the department on worker ownership, and it covers just over 2,000 workers. ARM Bokoni covers 2,500 workers. There are 3 transactions that are still going through merger processes, meaning the tribunal must still sign off on them. It's ShopRite Checkers, Implus, and Heineken. But they're very significant in numbers. So we've just reflected them because the work took place in these two quarters, but the decision will only be taken in quarter three or quarter four, and of course these some of the data may then be affected by it. Stekiniko had an ESOP that they indicated they would introduce, and Digital Titan reached an agreement, and it was approved by the tribunal that covers 227 workers. The next slide looks at job retention. Again, this is a few examples, and not all of the work that the department is doing, but it's to highlight four transactions covering 1,700 jobs, and this would be where a merger saved 300 jobs in the Van der Bell Park area, where a business rescue merger saved 860 jobs, where a firm was in distress and a merger saved 155 jobs in Saldanha, and where a merger will result in 330 new jobs. And over 42,000 jobs were supported and monitored in terms of commitments made in past competition mergers. The next slide just indicates some areas where work has been done on transformation to build a broader base to the economy. There's a legal sector charter that was published for comment. It was prepared by the Department of Justice and a team of people that Minister Ronald Lamola had put in place. So our job was really just to publish it for comment, and then to evaluate the public comment as it comes in. We've hosted the Black Industrialist Conference. There will be a special presentation to the committee in due course on it. The Black Exporters Network was launched. There were a number of competition interventions that had transformation elements in them. The Black Industrialist programs of the IDC, NEF, and the DTIC were in place, and there were institutional measures that were taken covering the council and the commission. The next slide then looks at entity governance over the six-month period. 51 appointments were made in this period. They covered the National Lotteries Commission, the Financial Standards Reporting Council, the National Consumer Council Tribunal, the Companies and Intellectual Property Commission, the Competition Commission, the Broad-Based BEE Council, and the Broad-Based BEE Commission. Four were executive positions in the sense of commissioners, and 47 were board members that were appointed. The next slide takes us to one of these, which is the NLC. Four new board members were appointed. There's a new board chairperson that was appointed and an acting commissioner. This had been reported previously. The next slide. This looks just at some of the work that the entity governance had undertaken. The committee will be familiar with it, from a moratorium on all proactive funding to forensic auditors that was appointed, to legal contracts and IT contracts that were terminated, all dealing with how to clean up the NLC. The next slide provides some information on the Broad-Based BEE Council. Following advice we had offered the president, a council was put in place, 14 members, and honorable members will see a wide spread of skills, experience, and expertise that is set out in there. Ms. Gloria Serobi, a veteran of Black Business, is one example, a number of other well-known people in the business community or in academia that are included there. The next slide provides information on the Financial Standards Reporting Council, a body set up in terms of the Companies Act. They do important work in advising the ministry on matters relating to financial reporting standards and in the making of regulations on financial reporting standards. They're led by Dr. Len Kona, and they've been appointed for a three-year period. and honorable members will see a number of prominent South Africans on that council, 17 in all, and it was quite a rigorous process to appoint these. We liaised very widely. We consulted with many, many institutions, from the Johannesburg Stock Exchange to people in the accounting profession, the legal profession. It was a thorough exercise to identify people of a broad range of experience that can contribute to the work of the council. The next slide provides information on the appointments of the National Consumer Tribunal. We've appointed Trevor Bailey as the chairperson and Mfundo Maseti as the deputy chairperson. And there's a number of people that will now make up the panel from which the tribunal will draw its members. A number of them have legal skills. Some of them have quite significant academic background and experience also. The next slide looks at key entity appointments. The CIPC Commissioner, Advocate Rory Voller, was appointed for a further period, serving second term as Commissioner of the CIPC. The B Commissioner was appointed, Mr. Sediso Matona, following consultation with the Portfolio and Select Committees. And the Competition Commissioner was appointed, Ms. Doris Tsepe, and we've provided some information earlier on her background. Moving on from entity governance to engagements with Parliament, in quarter one there were 8 presentations that were put there, although I only see 7 on the screen, but honourable members will be very familiar with these because these were the presentations made either to the Portfolio Committee or to the Select Committee, and it would deal with things like the Retail Clothing Master Plan, the support for Black industrialists, the incentive support for industrial infrastructure projects, and so on. The next slide provides similar information for quarter two, where a number of different presentations were made, rollout of one-stop shops, the scrap metal presentation, and engagement of the downstream sugar industry as 3 examples. And then, of course, the big one in that quarter was the presentations dealing with aspects of the NLC also that was presented to the Portfolio Committee. The next slide, just really to lighten the mood a little bit, I thought I would point out the kind of work we do. This is one of many examples where we approve the logo for the Rugby World Cup Sevens tournament in terms of the Merchandise Marks Act. So there's quite a bit of work. It means they would apply, we'd put out normally a call for public comments. We'll have to check that there's no reason in terms of the law why it can't be done. There'll be an engagement with them on the terms of the approval of the logos, and then eventually it would be gazetted. And in this case, the Rugby World Cup Sevens was hosted in South Africa in September, and the name was made a protected event in terms of Section 15A of the Act. And we've done similar things previously with the British and Irish Lions Tour in 2021. We did it also with the Border Management Agency's logos, and this is an area of work that is not normally reported on. The next slide now goes to key international engagement. I'm going to run fairly rapidly through these, but they're an important part of our work. The next slide provides information on the work that we've done on different aspects of our international engagement. And I'm going to just wait for the slide to move to the first new slide under part two. There we are. It's the German state visit The slide is not as punctual as things were at the German state visit, but Chancellor Olaf Scholz led a German government and business delegation for a state visit on 24 May. We held official talks at the Union buildings covering trade, investment, climate change, and other areas of potential collaboration. Germany is a major investor and a major trading partner for South Africa, and we want to get greater value addition in our export basket. Our manufactured products that we sell to Germany include cars, components, and steel, and on the right-hand side, there are these two boxes showing what we import from Germany, not surprisingly, car parts, inorganic chemicals, engines and turbines, cars themselves, electronic circuits, pharmaceuticals, measuring equipment, tractors, AV equipment, pumps, more chemicals and medical devices. And what we sell to Germany would be platinum group metals, cars, precious metal ores and concentrates, iron ores and concentrates, catalytic converters and the centrifuges, trucks, aluminium, coal, grapes, chemicals, outside also engines and turbines and citrus. And it's trying to get that basket that we don't only want to sell mining products, we want to have a rounded basket. And we've made some success in the car area in selling cars to Germany, which is like selling ice to people near the North Pole. But we hope we can do more to diversify our basket. Honorable Tringwan has to be very cautious nowadays with how people are described. So that's why I cut short my my analogy there. The next slide provides information on two big events with Botswana. Botswana is one of our biggest and most important trading partners on the African continent, accounting for both exports of things that we make, but also re-exports, where we import things into South Africa, package them, and then they get exported to Botswana. So a big part of our trade is in the second category too. There were two major events. The first was the South Africa-Botswana Binational Commission in April in Pretoria, led by the two presidents. We had binational bilateral meetings with my counterpart, and then all the ministers met with their counterparts in a joint meeting to look at the economic and strategic relationships, and then the two presidents chaired the formal talks. We also then went to Botswana in August for a Botswana-South Africa Business Forum and a roundtable. 56 South African firms attended. My colleague and I hosted a business forum. The two presidents then engaged with the business community, and we had a marketplace showcasing South African products and products from Botswana. The next slide just gives some pictures that will indicate the kind of look and feel of the marketplace and the event itself. And at the time, there were still masks were still mandatory in Botswana, and honourable members will see from the pictures that the business forum was also an opportunity for CEOs to share perspectives with government leaders. Next slide. Is a state visit from the president of Cote d'Ivoire to South Africa. And this is part of our effort to deepen trade between African countries. And we hosted this state visit by President Alassane Ouattara from Cote d'Ivoire in July. We had bilateral meetings, we had official talks chaired by the two presidents. We signed an MOU on economic cooperation, and we had a business forum with a number of firms from both companies. South Africa exported about 1.6 billion rands worth of goods to Cote d'Ivoire last year. They were a mix of manufactured and food products. The market in West Africa is large, and Cote d'Ivoire is growing very fast, creating significant demand for capital input and consumer goods. So we really want to work closely. We've looked at pharmaceuticals and medical products from South Africa's side, including machinery, sugar, frozen fish, automobiles. Particularly, I've raised the issue, can't we get minibus taxis made in South Africa into the market there? Herbicides and insecticides, polypropylene, TVs and paper. And we can also get South African construction companies providing their services there, because Cote d'Ivoire is investing very actively in infrastructure. Cote d'Ivoire in turn identified petrol, so petroleum oil, palm oil, palm cakes, cashew nuts, cocoa and cocoa paste, skin creams and rubber as areas that they think they can sell more to us. They're the leading producer of cocoa, and there's an excellent opportunity for building an African chocolate-making industry. South Africa's tire producers can also access rubber from Cote d'Ivoire as part of a more integrated auto value chain. The next slides provide information on the SACU ministers' meetings and the SACU summit. We had physical meetings in April and two in June, which included a SACU summit of heads of state. And we had an investment roundtable in April, looking at agriculture, clothing and textiles and pharmaceuticals. And we had a few virtual meetings also in that period. The next slide provides information on the AFC-FTA Council of Ministers meeting that took place in July in Accra. And a number of key decisions were made. We adopted the tariff schedule of Algeria and the combined offer of the East Africa community for preferential trade. We looked at the ministerial directive on specific commitments and adopted it. We looked at Egypt services offer, the rules of origin manual, the review mechanisms for it, the outstanding tobacco tariff lines where we adopted rules of origin, similarly with sugar, and we did work on the technical barriers to trade, and we looked at a dedicated session on the draft AFC-FTA regulations on SEZs and the outstanding rules of origin. The next slide provides just a little picture of us negotiating text that's projected on the screen and countries then making amendments to these. Next slide. It's the BRICS ministerial meetings. In the six-month period, all the BRICS meetings were virtual. We had an industry ministers meeting in May, a trade ministers in June, a business forum in June also, and the summit was towards the end of June in South Africa. We'll chair BRICS next year. So a lot of the meetings will take place in South Africa. Next slide. So WTO trade negotiations, we'll be reporting more in more detail at the meeting, one of the meetings of the portfolio committee. But this just indicates that we had the 12th ministerial conference in Geneva, the South Africa and India led minister level talks to waive intellectual property rights, resulting in very significant negotiation of texts. And we highlight five key outcomes of the conference. After many years of no meetings and deadlocks, we were able to get five meaningful agreements covering intellectual property rights, fishing, export restriction on food products, customs duties on e-commerce, and at least the terms of reference of the WTO. We took a picture of the negotiation, and sitting right at the center of the negotiation is the DTI official, who is our ambassador, the WTO ambassador, Mulumbi Peter, and in red next to her is the U.S. ambassador at the WTO, and honorable sharp-eyed members of the committee will spot Nikki and Mustaqim and others in the picture as they haggle over a line of text or a word. The next slide then goes to the G20 Trade Ministers meeting, which we held in Indonesia on 21 to 22 September. We looked at a range of issues, including reform of the global trading system and how to achieve our sustainable development goals, investment, inclusive industrialization, where we looked at the experiences of different G20 countries, and some of the experience of Indonesia was particularly interesting, and then the response to pandemics, to digital trade and to global value chains, and a number of bilateral meetings were held between South Africa and G20 members. The next slide provides information on various bilaterals that took place at ministerial level. These are just the physical meetings. They exclude the virtual meetings. And I met my counterparts over the six-month period from Japan, Botswana, United States, the EU, India, Argentina, Turkey, Canada, Singapore, Spain, Indonesia, Cote d'Ivoire, Saudi Arabia, the United Kingdom, Egypt, Ghana, Nigeria, Germany, Namibia, Lesotho and Eswatini, and Cambodia. The next slide then provides information on the master plans. Because of time, Chair, if I can go very, very rapidly through it, really a quick tour of it. I'm sure there will be more opportunity to go to some of these. Looking at Master Plan 1 on clothing, textile and footwear, the jobs that were sustained, the output committed by different entities to local producers, and on transformation, bringing more women-owned and black-owned businesses in the clothing industry. The next slide provides more information on the clothing sector, IDC commitments, rebate certificates, the cost reduction per garment that is estimated that can come from the rebate. The next slide provides information on the second master, on this master point, master plan dealing with jobs, 1,849 increased formal sector jobs that were recorded in the sector over this period. The next slide provides information on the sugar master plan, the funding dispersed to sugarcane growers from the transformation fund. This is an industry-administered fund, and also 7.7 million rand that has been made available between SASSA and the IDC for a study on the viability of South African sugar to manufacture aviation fuel. The next slide provides more information on the poultry industry, 22.5 million chickens slaughtered per week, information on the export value and new production capacity that's provided. The next slide goes into a little bit of granular detail on the poultry industry, applications received from the under the Agro-Industrial Fund and investment pledges by a number of different players in the sector that Mpumalanga and Eastern Cape are now declared free of aviation flu, the IDC approved a benchmark study to look at the supply of maize and soya to the poultry industry. The next slide goes to Master Plan Number 4, the auto industry. This indicates the efforts to bring new players and more South Africans into component manufacturing. This is the Transformation Fund and the approvals in the fund. The next slide provides a report on the Automotive Supply Chain Competitiveness Initiative. Of course, in this period, we've also done quite a bit of work on the electric vehicles, and we'll be coming back with the work on that as soon as it's completed. The next slide provides information on Master Plan Number 5, the steel industry. Here, the commitments that companies made that if they were able to get trade support, that they will deepen their investment and ensure that we find ways to make South African businesses more competitive so that they're not long-term, always dependent on trade support. And this information here, for example, of a company, Franke SA, that's made investment to upgrade the stainless steel zinc manufacturing capacity, and SA Steel Pack that's made investment in its aerosol manufacturing line that produces these cans for cooking oils, deodorants, spray paints, and so on. And they've been able to retain 279 jobs. Grinding Media invested 11.6 million to support new production, and all 398 jobs have been retained. The next slide goes into a lot more detail about what's been happening in steel with the Downstream Competitiveness Fund, the Project Management Office, and additional support implemented in quarter two. The next slide provides information on the IDC's work, 4.9 billion rand approved transactions in this period. That's created 1,224 jobs and saved 182 jobs. The next slide provides information on the Global Business Service Master Plan for this period and what has been done in different areas on women, 90% of the jobs for young people, and the new jobs created and retained by in the sector based on the support given. The next slide looks at policy interventions. It really deals with something the committee will be familiar with, the work on scrap metal and cable theft. The research has been done. The next slide provides an overview. Honourable members will be familiar with the next slide, which details the cost, the economic, physical, environmental, health, job costs of cable and metal theft. The next slide provides a brief report on the gazetting process, that a very large number of submissions were received from the public, so it's taken us longer to work through it. And the final package is being drafted for Cabinet's approval. The next slide looks at special competition and trade case studies. We go to the first of these new slides. It looks at trade matters. In quarter one, we did anti-dumping duties involving welded link chains from China, spades and shovels from China, and cement from Pakistan. We also reduced the import duty on sugar to take account movement in the world price of sugar. There's a formula that we apply when there's a shift in global prices or the exchange rate. That's quarter one. Quarter two, which is the next slide, has a similar one, looking at action taken on frozen potato chips, tires, float glass, fasteners, and PET. There's been again a shift in the movement of sugar, which meant we adjusted, we reduced the duty, and we put in place temporary rebates. That means a reduction in duty in a number of steel products and in various weaponry used for testing purposes. The next slide looks at special economic zones. What has been done in quarter one, there's a proud Deputy Minister Majola standing there with a team of people at one of the SEZ areas that is being investigated. But we report on the work done in Dube Trade Port, on the Tswane Automotive Special Economic Zone, and Musina Makado. The next slide provides quarter two work in the East London IDZ, where Draga Safety Zenith started operating. And they had pledged 135 million in plant and equipment. and it's the only manufacturing plant that this global company has on the African continent, on the Swane Auto SEZ. Various phases have been completed, and procurement spend on small businesses have been a part of the focus to make sure that we get more of that money flowing in local communities. The next slide provides then information on the spatial industrial development strategy, which Deputy Minister Gina and Deputy Minister Majola took the committee through. The next slide provides the first of a number of case studies. And what these case studies do is they go beyond the big headlines to see how does it impact on people in a local area. Where are the, what's the impact in communities? And so this is an example, case study one, of a company called Ardach that took over Consular Holdings, and the department negotiated a set of conditions. Honorable members will see the conditions on the right-hand side, that Consul needed to buy recycled glass from black suppliers, localization of bottles and dining glassware, no merger-specific retrenchments for a period, 3 billion rand investment cumulatively, and a worker ownership scheme for 7% of the shares in Consul. And on the left-hand side, honorable members will see quite interesting work where there were new furnaces that will replace 240 kilotons of imported glass every year. That's 2.8 billion rands worth of glass product that we can take out of the import bill. The DTIC also introduced Consul to a number of retailers to see, can we get glass, not a cup like this, but transparent glasses that you drink your water out of. All of that we're importing at the moment. So Consul is now looking at, they've got the required tooling to start production of dining glasses. It should be ware, as in W-A-R-E, dining ware glass. The next slide takes the Consul story further by providing a little bit of pictures that this was an investment commitment made at the investment conference. There are 1,800 jobs protected, 180 new jobs will be created. It will be localization of glass bottles and table glass, and there's worker ownership in the transformation. The next slide provides more information on individual workers whose lives are impacted, Makoma, Sinosha, Oscar, Bohopane. The next slide will have more South African in there, Nozipo, Mbili, Sean Carlitz. The next slide, more information on Bongani, Simang, Cornelius, Grevar, and what this, and later on we'll tell the stories more clearly, but it begins to connect the work of the department to the lives of ordinary South Africans. The next slide provides information on case study number two, is ARM Bokoni Mining and Platinum Mine. And this basically, the mine went into care and maintenance since 2017, and it's now been bought over by ARM Bokoni Mining Consortium. And 2,500 permanent jobs will be created. They've agreed to a black entrepreneur equity, a worker ownership 5%, a community ownership of 5%, and 2,500 temporary construction jobs will be created in addition to the permanent jobs once the mine is operating. The next slide is case study number three. It's an interesting merger. It's a small merger involving a ocean mussel company, these mussels that we eat. And that's a significant impact on international competitiveness of South African mussel sector and the maintenance of employment and manufacturing in Saldanha Bay. Both target firms had financial constraints, declining demand, high costs, operational inefficiencies. And so this was a consolidation that gives them a combined market share, improve their efficiencies, and they've agreed to protect 155 jobs and create 73 additional jobs, as well as to have transformation in the sector. And had this merger not taken place, this entire, these businesses would have collapsed, and the community of Saldanha Bay would have had additional unemployment to contend with. The next case study, number four, deals with airport services involving ground handling across Africa, South Asia, and the Middle East, and it provides information on one of the players that was that would have created a monopoly, raising very substantial concerns from the Competition Commission, and the Commission imposed a divestiture condition. This is where you're forced to sell off part of the business as a condition for the merger, so that we deal with the issue of economic concentration and the challenge of monopolization in the economy. The next slide now goes into case studies that are not specifically linked to competition, and there are many, so I'm not going to be able to go through all of them in detail, but maybe I have to highlight a few. Corobrik, in May, the facility opened. President Ramaphosa was there. You'll see him in the middle of that picture with a group of excited workers around him. More than 1,000 jobs were created in the construction phase, 100 permanent jobs in the production phase. But they also designed it so that they reduced their gas consumption. They've installed rooftop photovoltaic panels to reduce energy requirements, and they've allocated 26% of the share capital to a worker trust, and they are committing to expand their concrete operations in KwaZulu-Natal. And this was announced in the May budget speech at the DTIC budget vote, and it was also an investment conference commitment. The next slide provides information, just some photos of the ceremony. The next slide looks at a company called Brimus Engineering. It's owned by a black industrialist. It got support in this period. It will retain 128 jobs, of which 67 are youth, and they're located in the Steve Swete municipality. And the facility in Mpumalanga will make use of recycled materials and the treatment of brown water. The next slide deals with case study seven. And this is actually a number of different case studies. We've wrapped them together just to save space in the presentation. Volkswagen is doing a water recycling facility and installing solar PV in its plant. A black industrialist is going to manufacture gas and electric stoves using recycled material, creating 35 or retaining 35 jobs. There's a funding for a prototype to reduce energy consumption in mines, and there's funding for research in bioconversion of organic waste in soy meal and fish meal in the agricultural feed and pet food, so that we reduce greenhouse gas from landfills. So this is part of the green industrialization commitment in the budget vote. The next slide, case study number eight, is Taliso. It's a company in the detergent, glass, pulp and paper markets. They produce a sodium sulfate in Pitratif, and all of this replaces imports. They're producing 2,000 tons a month, and this product, the sodium sulfate, is used in detergents, glass, cellulose, and leather and textiles. 25 permanent jobs have been created, half from the Mkondo municipal area. and they'll launch, they'll get to full production if all goes well by the second quarter of 2023. This was announced in the 2021 budget vote and in the 2019 investment conference. It's a black industrialist running this business. The next slide is case number 9. So fascinating one, the Isuzu Back the Bucky production. On the 7th of April, the president launched the new D-Max Bucky in Pebeja. And the story is very interesting because the factory that they're using used to be the old General Motors, which closed a number of years ago. And we worked with Isuzu, and they decided to take over the entire plant. They scaled up production. They invested 1.2 billion rand that they announced in the 2019 investment conference. And I picked up on this in the 2022 budget vote. They've increased their output from 90 to 110 units per single shift. So this is more localization that we can add to our localization numbers. And this is special industrialization in the Eastern Cape with 1,000 jobs retained. Then there are some pictures on the next slide providing information, just workers doing the new D-Max Bucky and posing when the Bucky was produced. The next slide shows the walkabout on the factory floor and specific workers that spoke to us as we walked through the factory, and also the launch of the car at the local stadium. And then a driver in one of the vehicles who otherwise accessed the President of the Republic. The next slide has more pictures of the plant. The next slide then goes to case study number 10, and this is a social employment fund. This is a new initiative that the IDC is driving as part of the president's employment stimulus that was launched in October in 2020, and they're targeting 50,000 participants who will work for a minimum period of 1 year, about 2 to 3 days a week over that period. And we launched the fund officially on the 3rd of June. We have 28 strategic implementing partners. They will do the work of the community projects. By the end of quarter two, 30,000 jobs, 30,000 people were employed. This will grow further in the period ahead. And we announced this in the DKIC budget vote in May. And the origin is it's part of the Economic Reconstruction and Recovery Plan, and it's linked to the Social and Solidarity Economy Framework in the department's APP. The next slide provides information on the kind of sectors that we funded: health, food security, education, greening the environment, gender-based violence, creative and cultural sectors. 70% women in the projects to date, and Eastern Cape is the biggest province in using this, followed by Western Cape, and then KZN and Limpopo. Gauteng is still way behind, and we hope in the next quarter more work will be done with Gauteng. The next slide provides just some pictures of one of the projects that have been visited, this Sungula Farms in Benoni, 33 participants, and what it involves. The next slide goes to the case study 11. This is the 1 millionth polo that was exported by VW, which is the largest industrial employer in Karicha. And we provide information on their work on youth training. In July, they employed 565 trainees as part of the YES program, both internally at VW and in the national dealer network. And This is part of also just providing opportunities for young people. The next slide. This is the launch of the South Africa-Japan Business Forum. It was launched on 6 June, and I was accompanied by the two ambassadors, and the forum is intended to address constraints to levels of investment and trade. Japan is a very important trade and investment partner. We export 149 billion rands worth of goods to Japan, while we import 35 billion rands worth of goods. There are 132 Japanese companies operating in South Africa. There's the big names like Nissan, Isuzu, Sumitomo, and Toyota, but also a number of smaller ones. And this forum is to give business an opportunity to engage with government. One of the big challenges have been the visa issue, and we've worked closely with the Department of Home Affairs, and we were able to resolve 69 visa challenges. This was announced at the investment conference and the 2022 budget vote as things that we were planning to do. We've now been able to do it. The next slide provides a little wrap-up on the business forum, the agenda of it, and then the history to it, that we visited Japan in 2019. The president went, I also accompanied the president, and we met with a number of business people, and the idea of the business forum came up there, and we then subsequently met in May this year. I met with Minister Iwata Kazuchika, and we agreed the time is right to launch it. The next, and we then subsequently signed an MOU with Toyota. The next slide is the Black Exporters Network. On 12 May, we launched this network with 40 industrialists. It's now grown to close to 80. And the network is really intended to help open markets and build on the experience of large companies who can then support these medium-sized black-owned companies, and these companies are in auto components, food, machinery, doors, clothing, energy, chemicals, plastics, cosmetics, pharmaceuticals, furniture, many, many different sectors, and they export already to other Southern African markets, to the European Union, United States, China, Japan, Russia, the UK, Australia, and Canada. The next slide just provide some pictures of the launch of the Black Exporters Network publicly at the Black Industrialist Conference, and then some comments from various black exporters on how this is working. We're calling it BEN, Black Exporters Network. The next slide covers the study number 14 is the Langeberg and Ashton Food Factory. The Tiger Brands announced that they wanted to close it. It was going to mean 250 permanent jobs lost and 4,300 workers who work every season with the canning of the fruit. We set up a team from the department and the IDC, met with the CEO of Tiger Brands. They in turn met with farmers and workers, and eventually Tiger Brands agreed to postpone any decision for another season, which gives us more time to find potential investors. In South Africa, this is a big one. It's saving jobs. It's rural development. We account for 9% of world fruit exports, and it's about maintaining jobs and enabling an opportunity for other investors to come in. The next slide is study 15. This is a very important court case that we won. SARS, together with the DTIC, were the respondents. SARS had lost a court case at the Gauteng High Court involving the seizure of imported clothing from China, where the companies involved, or a number of companies, had underdeclared the value so that they don't pay the duties. And SARS seized the goods, and the High Court says, no, you can't seize it, you've got to release it. We took that on appeal, and the ministry joined in the appeal, and we provided a lot of information to the court, and some of it is on the slide. and the Supreme Court of Appeal found in favor of government, and SARS now has much greater clarity on its powers. So this is a focus on saving jobs. It links to the clothing master plan. It's about building a capable state and acting against crime and corruption. And it also was highlighted in the 2021 DTIC budget vote, the question of illegal imports. The next slide, case study number 16, provides information on a film that we, the DTIC has supported. It's called Silverton Siege. It was released on Freedom Day on 27 April by Netflix to a potential audience of more than 190 countries. I'm told that within the first week, it reached the top 10 in more than 90 countries, and it tells the story of three MK cadres who were held civilians hostage in the Volkskas Bank in Silverton. And then there were 79 full-time jobs during the production, and a black South African is the owner of the production house. And this is about telling our stories, but it's also about job creation and the promotion of local cultural outputs, and of course, their export earnings for these kind of projects. The next slide is also a movie, case study number 17, Umbrella Man. Is about the what's called the Klopse, or the minstrels in Cape Town. This, we've highlighted the focus on film in the budget vote earlier this year. The next slide tells the story in case study number 18 of building an electrolyte plant. Bushveld Energy is building this plant in East London Industrial Development Zone. It's going to produce 8 million liters of vanadium electrolyte annually, which can be scaled up. And this is a water-based chemical liquid that's used in redox flow batteries. And it's the most expensive component, I'm told, in these batteries that's used to store energy. And the IDC is a partner here. The initial direct employment will be between 50 and 60 workers, which will scale up to 110 as capacity is increased. There's also downstream jobs that can be created. They started construction last year, and they finished the facility in quarter two. The manufacturing plant inside, just getting the machinery and everything, is well advanced, and we hope it will be fully completed by year end, with commissioning next year and production hopefully as early as quarter two next year. So this is also about beneficiation. The next slide provides case study number 19 on Aspen. They've concluded a 10-year agreement with the Serum Institute of India to manufacture and distribute four routine vaccines that Africa has been importing from the rest of the world. And they're using their sterile facility in Tebega, which the DDIC supported with an incentive. And they've got to do this because there's a declining demand for COVID vaccines, and so they've had to shift to the production of the X-valent, the pneumococcal, the polyvalent shots, and the rotavirus shots. And we provide a bit of information to say that Aspen has become J&J's largest contract manufacturer globally for the product that they produce, and 110 jobs were created in the initial phase. The next slide, case number 20, provides information on a new SMME crisis partnership fund that the IDC is doing in partnership with Gauteng, and the DTIC has been working closely with them to see how we can get more value out of it. And together with money that the Gauteng provincial government and the SME fund is putting in, the total is now 300 million rand. And they're very optimistic. They think maybe 40,000 direct employment opportunities can be created in the small business sector. So we want to give them every bit of support in this. If this pilot works, then the idea is to try to do more in other provinces too. The next slide, case study number 21, is a titanium pilot plant that is being developed. It was completed in June. It's a semi-demo pilot plant. It will produce titanium dioxide in preparation for commercial scale work in Richards Bay IDZ. The commercial plant, which is expensive, of $550 million, will manufacture the pigment that is used, among others, in paints. And 550 permanent jobs will be created when the plant is operational, with a lot of indirect jobs also. And this is another example of beneficiation. The next slide is case study number 22. It's about a company called MCR Plastics. It's a strong women-owned and black-owned business in Utnake. They do plastic parts using injection molding for Volkswagen, and they have done quite significant work, including they've been able to get a grant to improve their operations. The next slide, case study number 23, deals with a PepsiCo Pioneer merger. The merger was done 2 years ago, 2020, but in April this year, workers got their first dividend, and I hope I can report the amounts next time, but it will cover about 11,000 workers, and it's a very significant worker empowerment scheme. One of the trustees has been appointed to the board of Pioneer Food as a non-executive director, and so this is getting workers really into the experience of working together with business, really shifting from an adversarial fighting model into one where South Africans cooperate with each other and with businesses that are owned by foreign investors to really grow the South African economy. There's a couple slides that deals with this. Because of time, I'm just going to ask that we move to the next slide, which deals with all of the detail, and then we get to slide number 24, which is a large furniture manufacturer that supplies schools, universities, hospitals, and private homes. It's Reboni. It's a subsidiary of the Masingita Group that was founded by Mike Nkuna, and they've created 103 new jobs in one of the projects. The next slide, case study 25, is Kerry's Food, which is a plant that was opened in KZN. Deputy Minister Gina went to open it, and it's now going to be selling products to the rest of the African continent, and they've done some really interesting stuff on low energy equipment usage, solar power generation, so that they don't become totally dependent on the local grid, waste heat capture and efficient water capture. So quite innovative things that has been done there. Case study 26, which is the next one, deals with a black industrialist community, part owned by a community development trust in a supermarket in Kuruman in the Northern Cape. And it's showing unlocking rural development and jobs being created outside the main metro areas also. And it was launched on the 28th of April this year. The next slide is another case study of a mining services company that's 100% black woman owned, and they provide scaffolding to companies, to mining companies, and conveyor belt maintenance to Anglo-American mines, and the NEF has supported them, and some of the metrics are there. The next slide is case number 28, and it's a waste management service that, and I've selected a couple of black-owned businesses to just show that with the Black Industrialist Program now, we're really trying to get more work in different parts of the economy, that we can really open up the economy to more South Africans. So they do waste collections and landfill operations, and There's been investment by the DTIC group in the business, and they have 342 permanent jobs. The next slide, case study number 30, is just work with the South African Petroleum Industry Association, granting them an exemption from the Competition Act for certain practices so that they can coordinate that all the refineries don't close at the same time for maintenance. The next part of the report deals with quarter two. I've done now only with quarter one case studies. Quarter two, there's the Google Equiano undersea cable. This is, the announcement was made by Google in 2020. They've laid the eighth undersea cable with the largest ever capacity that South Africa has. So we can now Zoom with the rest of the world and send emails and WhatsApp messages and so on. And the cable reached Melkbosstrand in August and was officially opened by the ministry. And it will deepen the digital link between South Africa and West Africa, as well as Europe, and through the networks with the rest of the world. OpenServe, which is a telecom link company, will connect the cable to the domestic network. And they've done some work indicating how many jobs can be unblocked through this thing. And this will assist us from phone calls to virtual meetings to text messages to emails to financial transactions to call center traffic. Our call centers that are located all over can also leverage off this, and it will support South Africa's link to the rest of the world. We already have seven undersea cables, and this will be the eighth one, and it was a part of promoting critical infrastructure. The next slide. Just shows the cable coming up with the ship, and it's 12,000 kilometers of undersea cable, and it can also connect us to other African hubs. It connects with Lome in Togo, with Lagos in Nigeria, and Swakopmund in Namibia, and of course Cape Town in South Africa. The next slide provides information on the SAPI cycle plant expansion. On 13 September, the president opened this new SAPI plant extension. And what this plant does, it takes trees, and through a process, it dissolves it into pulp that's used for the production of textiles and the kind of tablets you swallow and cosmetics and so on. So when you use, if any honorable members use lipstick, some of that lipstick would be made from trees. And 100 permanent jobs created, with 2,500 agricultural jobs, massive localization, which we will add to the localization numbers we had earlier in the slide. But their estimate is 5.5 billion rand just from this one project, and also sustainability benefits. The next slide, so there's a picture of the plant from the air, but this slide here shows that fabric, that beautiful fabric there, is a product that comes from the material that this plant makes. They then export this, and people make poles, they make fabric. You see that denim jacket and pants, all of that is ultimately made with the raw material and processed product that comes from this plant. The next slide provides a picture of the president with a large number of workers when we went to the plant, and the premier of KZN is also there. The next slide provides information on some workers. Sanele Lutuli was a field operator. Nomusa Mabida was a liquor analyst at SAPI. So they use liquor to basically process the trees and then take it further. The next slide provides information on another movie that we finance. I mentioned this movie in the budget speech, and it opened on the 30th of September. It's filmed in Cape Town. It tells an African story of an all-female military unit in the 18th century West African kingdom of Dahomey. And we provide information on the jobs created, Ownership of the 75% is owned by a black South African, this will also get a special screening at the Toronto International Film Festival, it's a focus on industrialization of the productive services sector. The next slide has another movie, Bloodstorms. It's set in ancient Africa, 1,000 days after the fall of Atlantis, and it tells the story of five surviving houses of Kemet as they find themselves worried by the prophecy of the end of days, and it's now on Showmax, and it's created a number of full-time equivalent jobs, and location where it was shot was Eastern Cape, Gauteng, and Northwest. Part of our film announcements in the budget votes. The next slide is the BEE Advisory Council that was launched, and the President held the inaugural meeting on 5 July, and it provides information on what is being done by the Council. The next slide provides information on the Black Exporter and Industrialist Conference, and we will be doing a presentation, a more detailed presentation to the committee, but this indicates the five major platforms that was there at the Black Industrialist Conference. More than 1,000 Black industrialists were present or showcased, and was really an eye-opener for many South Africans to see so many Black South Africans producing goods, growing the economy, employing other South Africans. The next slide, case study number 37, is on the legal sector code, which Minister Lamola and the team put together, and we provide information on what the code will cover, and it's gazetted for public comment, so there's no final decision that has been made yet, but it's to facilitate transformation of the legal sector to promote greater diversity. The next slide provides information on a company called Rayol Industrial. It's an interesting story. An InvestSA team, I don't know if Yunus Hussain is on the platform, but he and his team is doing really fantastic work. They went to a major event in Xiamen in China, an investment seminar, and they secured an investment. They interested one of the companies to come here. The company came here in 2011. They set up a porcelain tile manufacturing plant in Bronkhorstspruit, they expanded subsequently, InvestSA has assisted them in a number of ways. They've got a new production line that will now create an additional 150 jobs, and they export to a number of neighboring countries. The next slide provides the case study number 39. This is really a very significant one. A company called Hesto Harness opened a major operation in KwaDukuza in the Lembe district in KZN, 4,000 jobs. The products they make would be many different products that go into the into cars, from your wire harnesses, your headlight tail, your headlights, your tail lights, your injection molding, and so on. They have, it's a South African company owned by Metair South African, and they have operations in the UK, Romania, Turkey, Germany, and Kenya, and many Black South Africans are shareholders in this company through pension and provident funds. They export to 46 countries, and they employ 11,000 workers in their South African business, 70% of whom are women. They're part of the Auto Master Plan, and this big investment was announced at the investment conference in 2020. And it was the investment value of 1.4 billion rand. The next slide provides some information on the workers. This is Nokwazi Mbele from Stanger. She tells her story as a program manager responsible for the Isuzu and Ford projects, because this company does work for basically all the big auto players. And what she's done, where she's studied, and she says, as an aspiring woman, it's my interest to see young females developing in the future. I encourage women to study and further themselves. And so she's one of more than 4,000 workers running the operations in this plant. The next slide has the story of Samukele Siwe Koza from Kwadukuza. She's a mother of two daughters. She's a group leader, and she manages a group of 350 people. And she indicates what this job means to her life. The next slide is the final example of Nontobeko Mhlongo, who's from Stanga in Lindelani Township, married with five children. She's a key operator, and she teaches operations step by step to new workers until they understand the process, and she tells her story there. The next slide takes us to a facility in Free State that produces helium gas, and they're now busy with phase one, which involves the construction of the pipeline to join the wells, and this will be a very, very big project when it's completed. And so there was some key movements in this quarter on this project. The next slide provides information on the JP Morgan Partner Fund. We provide information there of a few companies, Arihas Developments and COM Group. These are black-owned companies that are supported. One operates in spares and goods for mining. The other one is in construction. And this was announced in the DTIC budget vote this year and last year. Next slide provides information on the case study number 42. And this is Sigma, this is a call center in Mitchell's Plain that will be taking young people from Mitchell's Plain and Khayelitsha as part of our global business service program. And eventually it's intended to employ in total 1,000 workers, but there are 90 currently employed. The next slide, case study number 43. Is one of the announcement of the regulations that's been published for public comment on exempting small businesses from certain practices in the Competition Act, and the details are there. It's been gazetted. We're waiting for comments to be evaluated before a decision is made. Case study number 44 is the next one. And this is Electric Solutions, electrical quality solutions business that created 13 new jobs in quarter two, and the support that they achieved from the AITF, that's the Auto Industries Transformation Fund. The next slide, 55, gives us a look at Score Metals. They're going to be producing a significant amount of new product that will bring competition to the market, and they manufacture rolled and wire rod products. They're investing 2 billion rand in a new project that will be an alternative supplier to AMSA, and they hope to commission the plant by December 2024. The next slide is a picture of the firm. The production process of Score. The next slide takes us to a case study on a tin mine in the DRC that the IDC supported as an equity partner a number of years ago in June 2019. But we're still seeing the benefits to the South African economy, and we highlight the benefits that we achieved this year in the 6 month period. Capital equipment that was ordered since April this year was 200 million rand, while future orders are estimated at 800 million rand. And there's a lot of really interesting data. 36 South African jobs at the mine and 4 jobs in South Africa. The next slide shows the flow of goods that the South African economy benefits from. And then we buy the tin from DRC and we process it here. The next slide provides another case study, 47, on another call center, African Talent by Deloitte. And they believe they can generate 1.5 billion rand in export revenue through global outsourcing over the next 5 years and create jobs, 400 new jobs, 60% for young people. The next slide is 48. And it's one of the what we call the NIP programs, the National Industrial Participation Programs, involving ABB. And there's a further example in case study number 49 in the next slide that we can also go to. And this is Baker Hughes and Fluid Tech that similarly is localizing a number of the products here in South Africa. The next slide is slide number 50. We only have 3 more slides left, so let me just say on this one, it's a slide dealing with the construction of 100 megawatts molten salt power plant in Postmasburg in Northern Cape. This is renewable energy. And the reason I use the molten salt is what they basically do is through that process, they can store energy even after the sun is set, which would push more energy into the grid. And the IDC is a partner. They provided funding to Pele Green Energy, which is a black-owned business that is the partner to Redstone. And they also co-funded the community shareholding in this 650 temporary jobs for the 33-month construction period. And the president opened this facility very recently. This will be one of the largest contributions to South Africa's energy challenge. And so there's a couple of ones like this that we're highlighting and getting the DTIC group to do more work on so that we can really crack South Africa's energy problem. But this is a very, very large one. The next slide, case study 51, is about the spice product. One back, if we can just go one slide back. It's Osman's Taj Mahal, for those who love their spices. And the company had quite a challenging time. It's a 100-year-old business. The floods disrupted it, so it had some support, which assisted it to get back onto its feet, 68 jobs. The next slide is the final slide in this, and it talks about China's ban on South African wool. Good coordination between Dowra, DTIC, the farmers working closely with the Chinese authorities that has ensured that the ban that came as a result of sanitary and phytosanitary rules, there was a foot and mouth disease outbreak initially, that's been lifted, and we could have lost a quarter billion rand if the wool ban had not been lifted. Chairperson, I want to appreciate the committee's been very generous in letting us go through the work, because this is the first opportunity we've had to cover the work for 2 quarters at one go, to cover it in terms of the new APP that is focusing more on impact rather than the boxes we tick, have we done the report, have we got the action minute and so on, because that is the administrative back office. But the front office is the impact it has. And when I say that we've selected these 52, even as late as last night, I was still asking for more case studies to be taken out because there were just too many. There have been significantly more than 52. And so Part of this is giving a sense of how communities are impacted by the work of the DTIC. What the next section does is it takes the committee, if we can go to the next slide, to what we've already circulated over the weekend to committee members, and the DG is available to take the committee through this. But if I can just say, given that it's been circulated, Chairperson, we are in your hands. If we can go to the next slide, whether we should take the committee through it, but this gives a bird's eye view of all 10 programs. We had a target of 54 that we needed to do. We achieved 50 in the quarter, and there were two programs that had not achieved everything. And the next number of slides then provides all the details, program by program, indicator by indicator, and the DG is able to take the committee through it. Chair, if you feel it is useful, or if the committee wants to take it as read. So may I hand over to you for guidance on this one, Chairperson, and DG is ready to take the committee through quarter one, as well as quarter two, as well as the financial support, and he may want to draw on the Irene or one of the team members to assist him as indicated. So, Chair, if I may first just seek guidance whether the committee would find it helpful that we take the committee through the individual slides that had been pre-circulated. That starts now from slide 166 onwards. Thank you very much, Chairperson.
Thank you very much, Minister. That was quite a marathon session. I think let's take the whole presentation. So let's take the rest of the slides that are still must still be presented, and then we can take a break. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. So I'm going to ask the DG now to take it over from here. DG, your chance to earn your salary. Thank you for the extraordinary work that you and your team has put together on this presentation. I know Wongi and Ntombi know that they've probably lost a little bit of sleep, but I think it's really been a lot of work put together. DG, over to you, through the chair.
Thank you, Minister. Greetings, Honourable Chairperson, Honourable Members of the Portfolio Committee, colleagues. Chair, I'm going to be relatively quick. As Minister has indicated, this is the actual report on the performance against predetermined objectives. It's what has been outlined in the annual performance plan, which we presented earlier on in the year. So this is going to provide a quick progress update in terms of actual performance. So for quarter one, Chair, we, as Minister has indicated, there were 54 indicators and targets, and four were not achieved. If we go to the next slide, the next slide provides the overall performance view per program. So starting with program one, in which there were 9 planned targets and 8 were achieved. And just very quickly, if we move to the next slide, really the work around program one covers a number of areas such as media and marketing, the cabinet and parliamentary process, which we've outlined in the earlier slides around the work that we've done to parliament over the two quarters, some of the red tape measures. But the key thing to highlight here is the one of the indicators that was not achieved was the number of fact sheets, which we had a quarterly target of 2. We've achieved 1. And this deficit will be carried over into the next quarters. The next slide. The next slide covers the work around our HR management, starting off with the work around transformation, where we measure employment with people who are disabled or persons with disabilities, women appointment at senior management level. And really, we're also looking at the public entity oversight unit, where we're looking to improve oversight, but also the more important work that we would want to also complete in this financial year is the work around the rationalization of entities. The next slide is the workaround program two, which is the trade policy. If we move on to the next slide, there were four targets, three were achieved, one not achieved. And here it sets out the work that was done in various fora, such as AGOA, in multilateral engagements. I think, in fact, we have highlighted some of the engagements at the WTO, the G20, and BRICS as well, and also the work that's done in SACU. So indicator that was not achieved was the red tape one, in which we are working quite closely with ITEC with regard to streamlining the ITEC's processes in terms of their work on trade. The next area is spatial industrial development. Here we have seven targets and all were achieved. And very quickly, this program covers the work around the draft spatial industrial strategy, which we've highlighted earlier, the township economy, where we've seen a key piece of work done with the IDC in partnership with the Gauteng government, proposals on SEZ designations. The next slide covers the district work across the 42 districts, and there's a report produced there. The review of the BBBEE framework, and here's a quite important piece of work in terms of how we take BEE going forward. Lastly, we also report on the work done on the EIP, the sector codes, as well as the BEE codes. The next slide captures the work on industrial policy, which is the sector's branch. And here we cover the work, we report on seven targets in which we've achieved six. And here we cover the work around the master plans, and we provide an implementation report across the various master plans. Furthermore, we cover the work around the non-master plan sectors, such as aerospace and defense, agro-processing, electrotechnical, chemicals, cosmetics, and pharmaceuticals. So here it's the work that the team are doing in partnership with the different sectors, also not covered within the master plan. Also, a key piece of work is the input into the draft procurement bill, and that's a very important piece of work to ensure that the work around transformation and localization is still embedded within our procurement legislation. And the indicator that was not achieved was a cabinet memo with regard to localization. And here it was returned for more consultation. The next slide covers the work around beneficiation and the opportunities there, the spatial equity through industrial institutions, some of the red tape measures, and lastly, the report on the technical infrastructure institutions such as SABS, NUMISA, NRCS, as well as SANES. The next slide is the work around consumer and corporate regulations. We had two targets, we've achieved both, and very quickly, the work covers the Gambling Amendment Bill as well as red tape. The next slide is the work in program six, which is industrial financing with three targets, all three were achieved. And here it covers the work around the different incentive programs and with regard to the value of investment leveraged. Here you can see we've achieved a majority of the targets. A key piece of work here is also the shared services model, where we're working much more closely with IDC and NEF to ensure a much more integrated platform in terms of how the department and its entities provide support. The next slide covers program seven, which is our trade and investment branch, or our export branch. And here we've already covered in the previous slides. If we can move to the next one, the work around our export opportunities in various markets, and we've already identified some of the pavilions that were held, some of the export leads that were generated. A key piece of work was around our foreign economic representatives, and these are really our trade attaches in the different embassies or foreign missions. And we've already reported on the business forums in support of various state visits. The next slide. The next slide further on touches on the work we've done around EMEA, in which we've supported a number of programs, as well as the export action plans. Next slide. Here, we've also reported on some of the red tape measures to improve our programs, as well as also reporting on how this program has also ensured that companies that are from various districts are also represented in some of our trade missions and trade programs abroad as well. Next slide. In West Africa, there were four targets, one were not achieved. If we can move quite quickly to the next slide. The key target that was not achieved was the investment facilitated, which was we achieved 1.1 billion against a target of 10 billion. And here it was largely around some of the COVID-19 travel restrictions. But here the Invest SA is working quite closely with the various parts of the department as well as the IDC and NEF to ensure that this target is achieved, and you'll see progress as we move forward and towards the next quarter as well. The next slide. Competition policy and economic planning, four targets, four were achieved, and here we capture the work around some of the public interest conditions in mergers, the progress in the implementation of merger commitments in the last 5 years, some of the red tape measures, as well as the oversight on the two competition entities. Next slide. Lastly, our program 10 covers the work on our research branch, where we had four targets, all four achieved. And the next slide captures quite succinctly the work around our research program. And here you can see there was a number of opinion pieces. There was a number of district level dashboards that were developed. So there was quite a number of useful research reports coming out of this branch. Chair, the next one goes very quickly again into the second quarter. The first slide captures provides a high-level overview of the work in this quarter. There were 76 targets, 72 were achieved, 4 were not achieved, and these 4 targets that were not achieved was in Program 1 and 2. If we move quite quickly to Program 1, and Program 1, here we've captured the work that we've done in our corporate services in terms of IT performance, in terms of the anti-fraud measures, and this is a new area of work where we seeing how best we can really introduce anti-fraud measures into a fully anti-corruption unit. And one of the key things here is to ensure that some of these risk measures are really embedded as part of the work of the department and its entities to ensure a real ethical and compliant state in terms of the work we do in this area. The rest of the slide captures the work around our media and marketing, and also an important piece of work around monitoring and evaluation, which is a key part of the work going forward. The next slide. The next slide captures the work that we've done already around human resource management. The key part of our new area of work is procurement, to support women, youth, and persons with disabilities. And here we are reporting against a target of 25% of all procurement towards women, youth, and persons with disabilities owned businesses. The two areas of work around our public entity oversight unit, which the team is working with the economic research branch, these studies have not been commissioned, and there is some progress in this area which the team have committed to correct as we move towards the latter part of the year. The next slide. is the trade policy branch. We have had 11 targets, 9 were achieved, 2 not achieved, and here we capture the work done on various areas. The first one is around SACU, the work around the AFCFTA. In fact, the first 3 targets is around the work around the Africa Continental Free Trade Area. Here you would see that we have fell short on the 90% of tariffs to be submitted to the AFCFTA. And here the work is being done within SACU to ensure that we do finalize this as soon as possible. We also report on some of the bilaterals with number of Asian countries, Latin America, Middle East trading partners, the work done in the WTO, G20, and BRICS, and lastly the report on legal supported issues with relevance to trade and international law. The next slide. The next slide captures the work that we've been doing in conjunction with SARS and a number of security agencies around illegal imports, and the coordination across the state to really deal with that. And we have highlighted earlier a case study around a legal matter that was before the courts. The work done with NEDLAC, the key one is around the target that was not achieved was a draft regulation, anti-dumping regulation, which was not achieved for this quarter due to delays in internal consultations with NEDLAC. Furthermore, we report on the work done on the draft patents bill as well as the draft design amendment bill. The next slide goes to the work on spatial. Here we've achieved all the targets, and really the work covers here, if you move on to the next slide, is the work done on the new spatial strategy, as well as the work done on the township economy, as well as the SEZ's industrial parks, as well as also the work around providing a report on how to strengthen governance and performance of SEZs in terms of the investment attraction work as well. The next slide. The next slide captures the additional work done by the branch in this quarter. Here we can see there was a CEO forum in which the some of the consultations that were held around the new spatial strategy. The next slide is the work around industrial policy. Here it's once again we've reported we had 11 plan targets, all 11 were achieved, and here we report on the implementation on all the approved master plans. If you look at the next slide, as well as the work on sectors not covered by master plans, such as the aerospace, agro-processing, electrotechnical, chemicals, cosmetics, plastics, pharmaceuticals, capital and rail equipment, as well as construction. Furthermore, we report on the work done on the new procurement bill and the preferential procurement policy on how we can ensure that localization and transformation still forms part of our work in this area. The next slide captures some of the localization work as well as the beneficiation work around some of the value chains in this area. Next slide. The next slide captures some of the work done in the medical products. And this was the work started during COVID to ensure that we do not have a shortage and to secure supply for medical products. As well as we also report on some of the work done in the green industry, as well as the spatial equity through industrial initiatives as well. The next slide captures the work done on the technical infrastructure in institutions, and lastly, the work done on the social compacts within the department and also outside the department with various forums such as NEDLAC, etc. The next slide is the work done on the corporate, the consumer and corporate branch. Here we've had four targets, all four were achieved, and here we report on the work done on the company's amendment bill, as well as the national credit amendment bill, as well as measures that were introduced and proposed against alcohol abuse. The next slide is the work done on the industrial financing branch. Here we've had five targets, all five were achieved. And the next slide captures the work that was done in terms of investment leverage through the incentive programs. Here we report 3.8 billion in achievement. We also report collaboration with the two DFIs in terms of streamlining our work, as well as part of the shared services, as well as the work done to support firms in the in a large number of districts, but also the work done on providing support in two master plan areas around film animation and global business services. The next slide captures the work done in our export branch. You know, there were six targets, all six were achieved. And the next slide really captures the work around our exports into the African continent, the hosting of a number of business fora to support state visits, the work done with export councils, as well as the export promotion and development work done in this area, and the export action plans, and lastly, the export promotion and capacity building activities in under-supported districts. The next slide is the work done in Invest SA. All four targets were achieved. If we move on to the next slide, we can see that Invest SA achieved the big targets of 20 billion rand that was set for them in this quarter. And we further on report on some of the work that they did around investor promotion, as well as unblocking some of the matters which various investors have raised and in which they have assisted various investors in this area. Lastly, they also report on some of the regulatory reforms in this space. The next slide is the work around competition. There were three targets, all three were achieved. And very quickly, we report on some of the work done on the public interest conditions, the implementation reports in mergers, commitments, and the tracking of these commitments made over the last 5 years, as well as the oversight over the two competition authorities. The next one is the research branch. Here we have seven planned targets. All seven were achieved. And once again, we report on the work done in this area. And the next slide, the next two slides captures the work done, the number of the different research reports in some of the master plan areas, some of the fact sheets that we've produced in the different areas, such as aviation fuel, electric vehicles, as well as also work being done around an employee stock ownership register, which would be the database in which we actually manage and track the work in this area. The next slide outlines some of the further work done by the research branch and outlines some of the opinion pieces in this area. Moving quite quickly ahead, financial performance, if you move on to the next slide. In this slide, we report the performance against an annual budget of 10.8 billion rand. In the first quarter, we report a spending of 2.1 billion rand, and the 2.1 billion rand went 49% went to our transfers to the public entities, the 17 that we do have, the also the work that as well as the funds first over various incentives programs, as well as some of the programs held by IDC and the CSR. The next slide provides some of the projection of the analysis of the spending. We can then move forward to the next slide. And the next slide captures the work for the second quarter, and here we report a spending of 5.6 billion rand, which equates to spending of approximately 51.5%. And here, once again, we report the big spending areas, which was 2 billion rand, or 39% towards the business incentives and infrastructure, 864 million rand towards the IDC and CSR, as well as some of the operational expenditure. Here, as we move towards conclusion, the last slide really captures or provides an accounting analysis of the budget for the first 6 months per program as well as per economic classification. And here we report the budget or the spending of 5.6 billion rand against a projected expenditure of 5.8 billion. And here it's the spending per program from an accounting and economic classification point of view. Chair, I'll conclude on this slide and perhaps hand over to the Minister if he does have any closing remarks, and then hand over back to you. Thank you so much.
Thanks, Minister. Do you have any closing remarks?
Well, thank you very much, Chairperson. Really just to thank the team for the work that has been done, and to say that this is it's work in progress. We are working on a new approach to how to capture both what we do and how we report. And my hope is that with each report, it can become a little bit better and sharper and convey better the new approach that the department has embraced as part of the annual performance plan. So thank you very much for the time the committee has given us to set out the report.
Thank you very much, Minister and Team DTIC. Members, we will now take a comfort break. I think in terms of the time, we're a bit over time as per our agenda. If we could then take a break until, I think, 5 to 12, which will give us a few minutes just to have a comfort break, and then we reconvene at 5 to 12. Thank you very much.